Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to A Fine Time for Healing, a sanctuary for your emotional well-being. Your host is Randy Fine, author of the memoir Finally, and the inspirational self-help book Awaken from Life. Now, here's Randy.
Good morning. Happy Wednesday. Thank you for tuning in today to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. I am your talk radio show host, Randy Fine. Well, it's October. Can you believe it? I mean, it was just July. But October is a really special month here. In this month, I will be featuring a variety of guests with very different stories that all have one thing in common. They have all glimpsed the other side. My guest today has visited the other side as well. Her name is Roberta Grimes. Roberta Grimes is a business attorney, novelist, and speaker based in Austin, Texas, who had two extraordinary experiences of light as a child. In an attempt to understand her experiences, she has spent decades studying nearly 200 years of abundant and consistent communications from the dead and other afterlife-related evidence that eventually enabled her to assemble an in-depth understanding of who and what we are, how reality works, the nature of God, and the meaning and purpose of our lives. Roberta has learned so much about the death process and the period immediately following death that in 2010, she published a brief summary of the best information called The Fun of Dying. It's a book. It's called The Fun of Dying. Find out what really happens next. And now it is my great privilege to introduce my special guest, Roberta Grimes. Hi, Roberta.
Hi, Randy. I'm so happy to be here.
It's,
where shall we start? Because we're talking about transformative experiences, would you like me to tell you what happened to me when I was 8 years old?
Yeah. I just wanted to tell you that I read your book and found it very interesting. The case that you make for the existence of afterlife is highly compelling. Yeah. Why don't you tell us about your experiences?
When I was 8 years old, a good little Christian child went to Sunday school. I woke up in the middle of the night in April of 1955, and I realized there's no God. I was terrified, terrified. And in the middle of the room, there was a brilliant flash of white light. Brilliant, but you could look at it. Didn't hurt your eyes. However, it was in the room. I remember that awful wallpaper, purple with little flowers on it, because of the fact that it's to this day, this is a vivid, vivid memory. I remember the plastic toys with the light shining on them. And as the light faded, a young male voice said, "You wouldn't know what it is to have me if you didn't know what it is to be without me. I will never leave you again." Now, when you're 8, everything is surprising, so nothing is. What I immediately understood from that was, oh, that's handy. If you forget there's a God, they remind you. And I went back to sleep. I assumed that it was something that they would tell you about in Sunday school and, you know, church. I mean, at some point, I would find out everybody has this happen if they forget. They get reminded. But of course, it never did, and I never told anyone what had happened. I even majored in religion in college because I figured by the time you get to college, you'll find out what that was. But again, I never told anybody. I never got any answers. So when I was 20, that summer, I was feeling really bummed because what do you do with a religion degree? So I came home from my summer job, sat down on my bed, daytime now, and over my right shoulder and splashing in the room was that same light. The same young male voice said, "I will never leave you." Then I felt like the dunce of the universe, right? Because most people appeared to me, didn't get it, had happened to them once, and I had it twice. So, I mean, how could I be that stupid? So for years I prayed, "All right, I get it, God. I'm never alone. Please don't ever do that to me again." And it's never happened again, not sadly. I wish I hadn't been so stupid when I was 20, but it was an extraordinary experience. But it started me on a journey because that had, A, it had been real. I mean, it was as real as anything else that happens to you. But B, that light came from somewhere. I wanted to know where that light came from. What was that light? And that's what started me doing that research. I figured wherever that light came from was probably where the dead were, where God was. I don't know why I made that connection, but that's what I assumed. So I have spent my life trying to understand the afterlife. Which, when you think about it, is a scary thing to do, because what if you did that research and you found out there was no afterlife and you were going to blink out like a light? Or what if you found out everybody was in hell, no exceptions? It's a scary thing to research, but I realized only after I had figured it all out that the reason I was never afraid to research it was that I knew there was something there. There was something real to discover, and whatever it is, if you were upset, there was this nice young man who would remind you that everything was okay. And so that's why a mild-mannered by day attorney turns into super researcher in the evening, and I've been doing it all my life.
It's amazing. I find it to be a very fascinating topic, and I you know, it's interesting because you said what I was thinking. I was thinking we don't really, those of us who like to explore this, do have an inkling that there really is something there, and that's why we're going after it. I don't think anyone that fears death is going to really explore it. They just don't want to know about it. They want to hope it never happens to them. So
that's why the title of the book, and that's why it's a thin book. You could read it in an evening, and it's written in just a happy, positive, upbeat style. You're going to take a trip. Here's a little travel guide. Here's all the fun stuff. Here are a couple things to worry about, but as long as you're aware of them, you won't have to worry. I tried to make it so unthreatening simply for the reason you mentioned, Randy, because so many people are afraid. They shouldn't be afraid. There's nothing to fear, nothing.
Nothing to fear, which is why I love doing these kind of shows, because I think the thing that everyone has feared at some point in their life is death. And when we get rid of the fear, there's only love.
That's
so
right.
It's very important that we embrace this. It's very important that we lose this fear, because if you don't fear death, there's nothing to fear.
That's right. Randy, that is so profound. The fear of death is a base fear. Once you lose your fear of death, you no longer fear anything.
Right.
Fear is the opposite of love. Hatred isn't. Fear is.
Yes.
And so if you're God-fearing, then you can't love God. But once you lose fear, believe me, there's nothing but love in your life. Nothing.
Right. It's a wonderful
group of that. And everybody I know who's done this work is in the same position. I mean, we found a science, which is really interesting. Anything that's real is going to have a whole plethora of things attached to it. It's going to be a whole new science. And this is a whole new science. And the science part of it is what's really been interesting to me lately, because it's going to be what I think is eventually going to wake up the people who now call themselves some self-scientists but ignore all this, to the fact that they better study it, because it all ties into the science they know, and they're basically dead-ended until they start looking at all this.
Yeah, you know, I researched it for for a show I did way back, and what I found was there is absolutely compelling scientific evidence. There have been scientific tests done that prove that there is an afterlife. It's very, very compelling.
Sure.
So, you know, and it has been done in a scientific method. So to me, there it is.
Yeah.
So
the problem is it's hard to pull it together. And that's what I try to do in this book, because I have read hundreds and hundreds of communications to get all the information I put in that book. You shouldn't have to do that. So I tried to make it easy. But then in order because nobody should believe me or you, frankly, Randy. I mean, people need to internalize knowledge. So I've given them a whole list of books, which, you know, read some of them, and you'll begin to have the same knowledge that we have. You won't, you know, you don't have to spend your life doing it because I've done it for you.
Absolutely. Now, in the beginning of your book, you talk about quantum physics and the physics of the afterlife. And I'm not science-minded, so I didn't totally get that whole thing. Though it made sense to me, I wasn't able to really put it together. So can you explain the physics of the afterlife?
Well, yes. The people who have died and communicate with us in more detail tell us consistently that the physics of where they go is very different from here. There's no space there. There's no time there, objectively. I mean, they can live in what feels like a subjective space and a subjective time, but it's not constant there. You can, and travel is by thought. You know, you can think, gee, I want to go to an Elvis performance, and he's performing on the moons of Pluto, and instantly you're there. It's amazing. These are the end of the universe in no time. So this is very weird. I mean, I had never even taken regular physics courses. I've never had a physics course, so I couldn't understand how that was possible. But then, early in this century, there began to be good quantum physics for dummies books. Quantum physics appears to be the plug that connects the physics of the afterlife, which is entirely consciousness-based, with the physics of this single material level of reality, which is, as we know, seems like it's physical, although it really is not. And it made perfect sense. It fit together because a lot of the things that the quantum physicists are finding weird about their own science are the very things that are commonplace in the afterlife. It all fits together. The consciousness is the only thing that exists. And the quantum physicists, the best ones, knew that 100 years ago. Max Planck is one of my heroes. He got the 1918 Nobel Prize in quantum physics, actually in physics, but for quantum physics. And he said in 1931, "I regard consciousness as fundamental. I regard matter as derivative from consciousness. We cannot get behind consciousness. Everything we talk about, everything we regard as existing, postulates consciousness." Mm-hmm. Essentially, what he discovered is that what we think of as human consciousness, our minds, are primary and pre-existing. Our minds are part of the same creative force that brought forth the universe. You're part of God. Your mind is part of God, and it's eternal. It never began. It never will end. And Max Planck discovered this 100 years ago, and he's been ignored ever since. I mean, think about how extraordinary that discovery is. I mean, not only are we eternal, but we're powerful. We have this enormous range of mind, most of which is not accessible to us while we're attached to bodies very briefly. But isn't that extraordinary, Randy? Think about that.
It's extraordinary, and that happens to be the message that I've gotten lately from everything that I've read, that there is a source, and we are all aspects of the source. And it was explained in one book that I read where, say you have an ocean, and you take a cup of water out of that ocean. All the properties within that container are the ocean, yet it's a separate entity. And so that explained it, you know, really well to me. That helped me to really understand that we just are contained in these individual physical units, but we are all part of the source. So tell us about some of the real evidence that you've found and why most people don't know about it.
Well, there was a real effort on the part of the dead in the early part of the 20th century to get this information to us. We were supposed to be making this, you know, broad sort of knowledge available 100 years ago. And there are excellent, excellent communications, hundreds and hundreds of them, that were received in three ways, through channels and through automatic writing, but primarily through deep trance mediums. Just sittings upon sittings with people's, you know, dead loved ones, where they would give this extraordinary information that was highly evidentiary. It was clear that they were talking to the actual dead people, the people who were sitting in the room were, but that scientists were still ignoring them. So what the dead did was to come up with ways to prove that they were there, some of which were amazing, and they passed all their own tests, and science still ignored them. So eventually, and this would, by the way, was the same time as quantum physics was becoming a genuine science, was eventually, I mean, 1918 was when he got a prize for it. So, you know, Max Planck was doing his research at the same time, and I believe that was meant by the dead to be a way for us to understand what they were telling us in their afterlife communications. They really tried to make us understand what was going on, but they were ignored because scientists until recently, actually I've seen it in print in older books, atheism is a fundamental dogma of modern science, atheism. Mm. So okay. They will never go near anything that smacks at all of the possibility that they might conceivably have, you know, lose this battle they've been running with Christians, which is ridiculous because the Christians are no more right than they are. Neither of them is right because they're so focused on fighting each other that they don't try to understand what the truth is that lies between them.
Right.
Both of them have aspects. They just don't have the whole picture because they can't. So anyway, I'm sorry, what was your question? Oh, wait, what's the evidence? The evidence is those early communications, the fact that they're all perfectly consistent, many hundreds of them, consistent in tiny details and in big details, and but together, because they each of them gives us a little kind of different aspect of it, they give us an extraordinary complete picture of what's going on. People who travel out of body give us the same picture. Nowadays, we have people having near-death experiences, very similar picture, although incidentally, they go to the same energy levels of reality that where the dead are, but they don't go to the actual dead. They, I'm pretty confident that's true. I've not been sure about it for a long time, but they all, if they stay long enough outside their bodies, they tend to come to a place and be told, if you go any farther, you can't go back. So they seem to be living on the same edge while they're out of body. They live on the same edge where so many other people now are meeting their dead loved ones, which I'll talk about in my next book. There's the communication methods that people are coming up with now are extraordinary, and they seem to involve visits that happen in the same kinds of place where the near-death experiencers go. But there's all of that. There's quantum physics, which makes it all make sense. And I didn't write The Fun of Dying until I made an extraordinary discovery. I had been a really strict Christian. I read the Bible through, you know, a dozen times cover to cover, and maybe three times as many times as that I've read the New Testament. I majored in religion in college. But by the time I was about 50, I was coming to understand there was no way to reconcile Christian doctrine with what I was learning, and I was very troubled by that. I mean, Jesus was my best friend. I couldn't stand for him to be wrong, so I stopped reading the Bible way back then. However, I began to think, you know, what I'm finding out is kind of similar to what the guy said. I want to try to go back. So I went back a decade later and read the Gospels, just the Gospels, and I found that there was somebody who walked the earth. I don't care what his name was. He walked the earth 2,000 years ago saying he knew things. And in fact, he told us things about God, reality, death, and the afterlife that we couldn't have confirmed in any way until the 20th century.
Amazing.
Big things. So I don't care what his name was. If we have that validation from 2,000 years ago and we are now confirming that all that stuff is true, there's no way. As scientists would say, the odds against chance for those results are just incalculable. So if it fits the science and if it fits the what Jesus said, or what any, you know, take a random person who claims to have really known this stuff and turns out actually to have known this stuff 2,000 years ago, and you put that together with decades of reading communications from the dead, and it all is consistent. I mean, there are no outliers even. It's all consistent. So it's impossible for this not to be true. It is impossible for your mind not to be eternal. There is no conceivable way that there is no death, no afterlife. It is all real. It's as real as anything else. Plus, scientists have now found where it is, except they don't understand what they found, which it's funny to watch them stumbling in the dark, and I've been watching them stumbling in the dark for 20 years. But they've discovered that all this careful study they're doing of the universe and physics and all this, they're studying 5% of what exists. That's it. More than 95% of the universe is made up of what they call dark matter and dark energy. 27% of the universe is dark matter, and 68% is dark energy. And they call them dark only because they don't interact with material photons. I mean, the photons of light that you and I see when we, you know, look out at the sun or turn on a light bulb, that's not spiritual light. That's a kind of physical light. And dark matter and energy won't interact with it. Well, so what? I mean, of course, the light I saw in my bedroom was spiritual light. It wasn't physical light. And spiritual light, I'll tell you, is much brighter than what we think of as regular light. But think about this. 27% is dark matter. It's right here. It's matter. We can't interact with it, but it's exactly where we are, which is, in fact, where the afterlife is. And the proportions are right, because there are six, but below the source, there are approximately six energy-based levels of afterlife reality, and they make up 27% of the universe. That's pretty close to a direct correlation between the 5% that's material and the 27% that's non-material. When I realized that, I said, oh, my goodness. I have said, oh, my goodness, so many times doing this research, Randy. You have no idea.
But many aha moments.
Oh, my God. It's amazing. Yes. I mean, and the sense of awe that now the highest level beings are now working with us to get this information, to get these truths to the world. And that's new. I don't think they even were working to the same degree 100 years ago. They feel a special urgency about it now. They're working
yeah.
with people who are...
I agree. I mean, channelers...
You see that too, yes.
I absolutely do see it. Some of the channelers that I've worked, that I've talked to, and mediums and everything, they are receiving information from these places that we don't even know about. All this
right.
consciousness that exists in the universe is trying to help us
yeah.
Because we need the light. We need the light. And if everybody works on their own consciousness, the light will overpower the darkness that we're experiencing here. So it's really important that we all wake up and deal with this.
Yeah.
Where do you think the afterlife is? I mean, is it another dimension? Why aren't we aware of it?
Well, if you had a television set and you're turned off where in the room where you are, and all of your listeners, if there were TV in the room and it's turned off, there are all these TV signals in the room, but you can't pick them up because the TV's not on. You turn it on, it's on a channel. It's on an energy vibratory level, and you pick up what appears to be a solid reality. I mean, granted, it's not three-dimensional, but it's a reality. And your mind is that TV set. Right now, your mind is tuned to this level of reality into that particular body on this level of reality. That's how little you're connected with what you think of as your body. That's how little you're connected. I mean, your mind is far from here. If you saw the movie Avatar, you'd have a better understanding. I mean, right now, the blue body, Jake's blue body, is what you think you're sitting or standing around in, and in fact, your mind is safe in eternal mind. Mm-hmm. When you die, all that happens, this is, we think, and I'm not sure, but we think this is the lowest vibratory level, this range of vibratory rates that makes up the material universe. But right in the same place are all those other channels. There are at least six we're aware of, but they're not like stripes. They're more like a rainbow, so they shade into one another. What happens when you die is that your mind simply tunes to a higher vibratory rate, and you pick up a whole new solid reality. Solid as this one. In fact, the people who are there, who were once here and now they're there, say, you know, you guys don't know it. Where I am now is real. Where you are now is the illusion. So it will feel very comfortable, and it's very Earth-like, only it's perfect. It's gorgeous. It's much better than the Earth, but it will feel so comfortable to everybody who's listening because it feels just like here, only better.
Right. So my understanding was that...
Is that a dimension? I don't know what that is. I'm sorry. I'm trying to still answer your question.
Yeah.
They're just energy levels. That's all. Everything is
energy levels. Right. What was I going to say? I forgot.
I'm sorry. I get so excited.
Okay. Okay. I mean, this is just such fascinating stuff. I love it. I love to hear this kind of stuff. So you were starting to tell us about what it's like when we die. Is there more that you can tell us about how death feels? And I mean, I watch this. I'm a hospice volunteer, and so I sit with people that are actively dying. But I would love to know more about what they're experiencing.
Well, to begin with, virtually everybody, I would say everybody, but you know, we can't be 100% about anything, will have deathbed visitors. And they, when they start to be visited, usually in the upper corners of the room, when they start to be visited by people they love who they thought were dead, and there they are as alive and healthy and happy as ever and looking young, when they start to get those visitors, they stop usually communicating with us. Or they'll say, can't you see him? He's right there. But most of them, you know, their brains and their bodies are terminal. So they don't have much energy while they're still in the body. So what they do is they'll lie looking at a corner of the room. If you're with someone who's doing that, they're talking in their mind to their visitors. And they may not want to talk to you about it. Many of them don't. But what the last words of Steve Jobs were, oh, wow, three times, and he stopped then communicating with his family. We know that what happened was he was seeing his, you know, who knows, but people who had come for him. So that's when you know everything is going to be fine. Eventually, your body, if you think of your body, it's like Matryoshka dolls, Russian dolls. They're all nested, and those inner energy bodies are leaving, whereas the outer, the material body, and probably the what we think of as the aura, that outer energy body that's been protecting us, keeping us from having negative influences energetically, those are staying. So there's a separation that happens in your feet and in your hands, and it moves up into your chest. People who have described this, because they've died, say it isn't frightening, it doesn't hurt, it's just interesting that you can sort of feel it happening if you're awake when it's happening. But you gather into your chest and head area, and then you leave. That energy leaves. People who have seen it happen describe a mist, sort of a glowing mist, and you form outside your body. And the body that forms is naked, but you immediately clothe it with your mind. It's still attached to that body that you're leaving by what the Bible calls a silver cord. It's sort of a glowing energy cord, which has been very tough your whole life. You travel out of your body every night, and you've been able to go anywhere in the universe and have that cord be strong. But now you're dying. The cord starts to fray, and then it separates. It almost disintegrates. At that moment, your body dies. What's been keeping it alive all along was that it was connected to your internal energy body. Mm. Once your body dies, you've got to get out of there, and that's why you've got those visitors. They immediately try to hustle you out of there. And incidentally, some of them could look like religious figures. If that's whatever you think, whoever you think is going to be there would probably be who is going to be there. I'd like you to be there for me, Jesus, but I understand you're probably busy. There's a lot of people doing the same thing. But once you start to leave, if you look back at the room, interestingly, people who've done this say it starts to look the way you would think heaven would look. It looks vague and vapory, and then it just sort of dissipates because you're leaving that energy level and going to a higher one. You're sort of in a little bit of gray, and then suddenly it opens up into this beautiful place. All the communications in English describe the North American and the British Summerlands, and the Summerlands are levels 3 through 5 of the afterlife. That's what I call them, and many people do as well. They look sort of, I mean, the North American one seems to have snow-capped mountains and beautiful hills around it, but they all have beautiful formal gardens. The flowers are permanent. They're in colors you've never seen because they're beyond the visible light spectrum. They give off beautiful music and energy and lovely fragrances, and they turn their faces to you. They're almost like little creatures. The flowers are. Mm. There's so many extraordinary little details like that that they tell us, the dead tell us, because they can't get over it either. If you were the most loving and the richest parent you could possibly be, and you had a child you wanted to really make happy, that's what the afterlife will be like for you. Because you are the most beloved child of God, and that's what he wants. He wants you to be happy.
That's just such a beautiful thing. So tell us why we need to finish out our life here rather than just escaping to this utopia in heaven.
Well, when we come here, to come here is a privilege. This is like going to the gym or sort of an emotional, spiritual gym. And not everybody who wants to be here gets to be here. It's a privilege. You've been given a tremendous gift to be here. Before you got here, you and those who were going to be important in your life wrote out detailed life plans. And it specifically was the very things that are most griping you now, you wrote in as exercises in a gym. Your mother-in-law, the trouble you're having financially, whatever things you think my life would be perfect without that, that's the very thing to be most grateful for, because that's how you're going to grow spiritually. Mastering that, learning to love and learning to forgive with that extra tension, learning to love and forgive that mother-in-law, whoever it is that's bothering you, and learning to care about the important things. We came to learn and to grow, and we came to learn and to grow specifically in the areas of love and forgiveness. That's it. For nearly all of us, that seems to be our whole purpose. But if you don't do it, then you're blowing this great opportunity, since we all want to advance. I mean, if there ever were a place you wanted to advance, it would be the afterlife levels. And in order to do that, we have to learn more perfect love and forgiveness. So if this is the gym and you came here because you're on level 3 and you want to get to level 5 as soon as possible, don't blow that. You'd be very upset if you were to leave when you hadn't done everything you could with the life lessons here. But it's just a bad day in school. That's all it is. You're eternal.
It's so inspiring. why do people talk about hell? You know, I mean, I've heard that there is a dark level, but can you tell us, you know, what is there? Is there a hell, and what have they discovered about that?
Well, here's something which may surprise anybody who has been a Christian, and I was a devout Christian. Now I just follow Jesus. I couldn't do both. Because indeed, there is an unpleasant level. It's not hot, it's cold, dark, smelly, disgusting, and full of demons who actually are people, but they think of themselves as demons. I have found no evidence, and I've been looking for it for decades, no evidence ever that anybody was ever judged by God or by any religious figure. The only judge is ourselves. We judge ourselves, and if we haven't done the best we could with our life lessons, we can be very hard on ourselves. You think you'd give yourself, you know, you give yourself a break. But no, standing there, looking at the way you have affected other lives, because that's the worst part of your judgment. You get to feel how you make everybody else feel in this whole life. And when you see that, and when you see the chances you passed up to do a little kindness that would have been nothing to you, and how it would have helped another person to feel better, people have a lot of trouble forgiving themselves. To hear people talk about it, it almost makes you cry sometimes, the dead. It takes a long time. And by the way, forgiving yourself for killing yourself in midlife is one of the hardest things. So that, if you ever thought about suicide, you can't do it, because you'll almost certainly spend some time in a place where you do not want to be, and you'll be the one who put yourself there.
And it's not an escape from the feelings.
Nope. No, the problem with killing yourself is you can't kill your mind. And your mind is, if your mind is alive, then you're putting yourself in a very much worse situation than whatever you think your situation is now. If you can't
right.
kill your mind, there's no point to it.
So how do these entities or souls or whatever we want to call them, how do they get out of this hell area? Do they have to reincarnate, or can they grow in that level and rise above it?
They can't reincarnate from there. It seems to be impossible even to communicate with them when they're there. But they're very wrapped up in themselves. If you ever imagine selfishness, there's no selfishness like someone who is absorbed in his own guilt and misery and has put himself in that position. They've got to be rescued. And one of the things that people do who first land there, who are relatively pure spirits, is they're welcomed by a very high-level being who says, you know, if you have a little time, let's go down below and see what we can do. Because for some reason they can perceive a person who's just died, they can perceive that person much better than they can perceive the upper-level beings. And they can sometimes be reached by these people. And they just try to talk them home. If you've wronged someone and you put yourself there because of that, oddly, I know it's odd to us, but it makes perfect sense when you think about the physics of the afterlife. The people who will be rescuing you will be the people you harmed. Not only have they forgiven you, but they can't ever go on with their life until they're able to get you to the place where you can forgive yourself. That's what all it's about.
That's so beautiful.
It's full of the afterlife. Lowest level is full of people who did harm in the Holocaust, for example. The people rescuing them are the people they killed and tortured, who are desperately trying to get them to forgive themselves. Think about that. I have never seen a single example described, and again, this is another thing I've looked for, of someone who had any trouble forgiving anybody, no matter what they had done in life. I don't care. They murdered your family. It doesn't matter. You forgive immediately because you realize it was not real. where you are now is real. That was just, we were all, you know, in school, and someone hit me over the head with blocks. That's all it was.
I love that. That's so funny. That's funny. You know, it does help. It helps. You know, I was raised in an abusive home as a child, and it really helps me to see my parents in a different way. And I understand that we all came here with some kind of plan of how we were going to interact. I grew, they didn't, you know. But we're all souls. And when we meet up again, we're all going to be just beautiful souls. So what we experience here is not really the relationships that we ultimately have with these people. It is just for us to learn and grow, right?
That's it. Yes, yes. If you think of everything that happens to you as either love being given to you or a call for you to give love back, mm-hmm. then love becomes automatic. If you think, and forgiveness, it should be radical forgiveness. It isn't, you know, I'll forgive you, I'm trying. It's more like saying, no matter what you did, it isn't real. I don't even notice it. I love you mm-hmm. regardless. And right. you think you can't do that? I've worked on it for so long, I do it automatically now. I can't tell you how much good you can do for yourself when you internalize these lessons. It makes you so happy. That's maybe the main thing about this, Randy. It makes you so happy.
Right. It does. Everyone talks about God. Now, God would be equivalent to what is known as the source, or there's definitely different ways of referring to God. So are we all parts of God? If we are all parts of the source, tell us what God is.
God is, as best we have been able to determine, an energy-like potentiality without size, without form, infinitely powerful, alive in the same way your mind is alive, highly emotional, and therefore, I think, probably self-aware. God doesn't have a beard. God is not made in our image. God has no human faults, none. God doesn't judge. God doesn't have a need to learn anything. But I don't use the term God anymore. I use Max Planck's term, which is mind. Other people call it consciousness. People call it source.
Right.
You can call it God because that's the only God there is. That's what God always has been. People made these idols in the image of what they knew there was something there, so they made up a man-like thing to be just bigger than a man.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not what God is. God is totally different. God is only mind. And God is perfect.
Well, for anyone that's listening today and you know, is very religious, you know, this is not meant to insult your religion. It's just meant to create a consciousness, to create an awareness. You know, God is just love. And when we think of him otherwise or think of the source otherwise, that's what's creating all these wars and fears in this world, and it separates us. So we need to understand we are all the same. We are all loved the same by God. We are all equal.
Yes, you don't have to be religious to get into heaven, to get to the Summerland. It doesn't matter whether you ever practiced religion in your life, but it matters deeply whether you've done exactly what Jesus said to do, learn to love, learn to forgive.
Right. It's simple.
It really is simple. And I feel a kind of an urgency. I used to be very deferential to people's religious beliefs, but I feel some urgency about getting the truth out because they're working on a soul phone now. Within the lifetime of most people listening, there will be a way for people to be talking with the dead by phone in some real-time fashion. Once that happens, immediately they're going to say, you know, Jesus didn't die for your sins. Jesus came to tell you the truth. And he told you that in the Gospels. Why weren't you listening? And my fear is if we don't help people understand what Jesus really came to do and what Jesus really does teach, which is all there. I mean, I would make, you know, you could just read it for yourself. If we don't do that, they're going to throw out the baby with the bathwater. I don't want that to happen.
Right. What do you think Jesus, so Jesus has been labeled the Son of God. What do you think Jesus is just as any of us are with just, you know, a higher consciousness? How would you define Jesus?
people have asked this question repeatedly of the upper level beings. They've all been told Jesus is at the very highest level, but Jesus is appalled at what people have done with his word. I'm really sorry, but I think we need to think about the possibility. If you read only the Gospels and you have no understanding of what the religion is that was built around it, if you read only the Gospels, you see the teachings of this glorious eternal being who came to primitives and said, hey, look, you don't need religion at all. I think he came to abolish religion, to tell you the truth.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to God, you go into your room and talk to God in secret, and he who hears in secret will listen to you. Now, he had to say things carefully because he was being followed by the temple guards, and to talk against the prevailing religion was an instant death sentence. He had to stay alive long enough to get the word out, and he stayed alive for 3.5 years. And you can see, when you understand that he was always preaching under a death sentence, you understand why he spoke in parables, and then he said, he who has ears to hear, let him hear, wink, wink. there's a deeper meaning, and he told us that we are our own judge and God is not our judge, but he said it in several different places over different days, and you can see that too. It's amazing to me how accurate the Gospels are when you think that they were first kept in people's heads for like 30 years, and then they were written down, and then they were translated from Aramaic to Greek to English, and still 95% of what Jesus is quoted as saying in the Gospels, I can show you in the afterlife evidence what he meant. That is a gift.
Yes, it is. I want to say, Roberta, that we are close to running out of time, and it's really important to me. I know this is such a great discussion, and I believe that whoever's listening is going to get so much out of this show. But I want to give you an opportunity to tell us how we can get in touch with you, to just toot your own horn, tell us what you do. Just take about a minute or two and share that with us.
Well, when I was first made to understand I had to start getting this out, I wasn't sure how to do it, and I still practice law. I'm a business attorney. So I've just gotten into this gradually. I have a website, robertagrimes.com, with no punctuation, just robertagrimes.com. I blog there. All my books are there. You can buy them through Amazon by clicking through from there. You can get a novel for free. I love doing my novels. They're based in what I've learned about humanity from the afterlife evidence, except that they're romantic and they're fun. And I just love writing them, so it's my hobby. And if you read them, I'll be thrilled, and I'd love to hear from you. Please read my blog. If you go to robertagrimes.com, I blog once a week. I've had a lot of feedback from my blogs. There are people now who retweet them, because what I'm trying to do is help people understand what reality is based on what the afterlife evidence tells us, and what, you know, I just, all the things we talked about today, Randy, and others, I blog about. I have a radio show as well called Seek Reality, because that's what we all should be doing. It's been on for a little over a year. I still already have 100,000 followers on iTunes. If you go to iTunes and just Roberta Grimes Seek Reality, you can follow me, and I would love that. And I'd love to hear from you as well. You could contact me through robertagrimes.com, or if you don't want to even do that, rgrimes@robertagrimes.com. I answer emails.
Okay, and perfect.
Was there something? I mean, I do answer emails. A lot of people don't, but I do.
Yeah, I do too. I like
you.
To put a lot. I put a lot of thought into.
Said that, Randy,
into,
because you care. I could tell you care. And if you care,
no, I do care. I do care. I'm not in this for any other reason except to spread love and reduce fear and help people navigate this crazy process through this thing we call life. But
yes.
Our time has run out, unfortunately, and I want to thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing this incredibly interesting, fascinating, provocative knowledge that you have with us. I think you made a very compelling argument for the afterlife.
It's there, and it's wonderful. God loves you more than you can possibly imagine. That's really the message.
That's wonderful.
And thank you for letting me be here. I've really so much enjoyed chatting with you.
Thank you. And we'll have you on again. Roberta wrote another book. We'll have her on again. But just follow my show pages and you'll see it. Okay, well, I have to say goodbye. Unfortunately, our time is up for today. But if you have any comments about today's show or any other shows, please email me at Love Your Life at randygfine.com. That's randygfine.com. And you can go to my website, which is randygfine.com, and sign my guest book, become a follower. My blog is growing by the day. I offer a lot of inspiration there. And I just want to say thank you for tuning in and listening to A Fine Time for Healing. So I am talk radio show host and author Randy Fine, signing off until next time. May joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening. You can